It is now my privilege to introduce tonight's speaker. And our speaker is Jose A. from Fresno, and he would like to for me to tell you that he is a sober member of AA.
I'm Jose, and I'm an alcoholic. I'm a little nervous. All you people in the back intimidate me, okay? When I was new, I used to sit in the back, and we had a nickname, the Half Measures Group, okay? And so I feel like right at home. You'll probably hear a lot of BS for the next maybe 60, 70 seconds until I get in touch with my honesty. I am delighted to be here. I want to really, really congratulate Jaime and the other young lady who have 8 days. 8 days of not drinking, abusing is a really, really long time. I don't know about you, but I couldn't go one day without drinking. And so when I see somebody that's got 8 days, it really just reminds me what a monumental task Alcoholics Anonymous had done at that time. I guess I should tell you a little bit about myself. As I said, I'm Jose and I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is October the 3rd, 1978. By the grace of God, I haven't had to have a drink or smoke dope or take LSD or some of those AA-approved medications for 37 years, all right? Interestingly enough, to make 8 days probably a hell of a lot harder than to celebrate 37 years. You know, and I am so grateful that those two people came out with those 8 days, because it takes me back what it used to be like, what happened, and then what happened. My home group is the village group, where the men are handsome, the women are strong, and the children are about average, all right? And I think it's the best home group in the world. And if you have a home group and you don't think it's the best one, don't come to ours, okay? I feel a lot of pressure because there's a lot of people here that have been in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous for some time. And, you know, with the length of sobriety that God has granted me, I feel compelled that I should say something, you know, interesting, something profound and everything. And, you know, I don't really have a good story, okay? I don't have a type of story that I was driving by, I saw you guys smoking and hanging out, and I thought, shit, I think I'll join them, you know? And we became friends, you know? My story is the story of a guy that couldn't go one day without drinking, and I didn't know what the heck was wrong with me. As you can tell, I come from a different country. I look different. I act different. I feel different. You know, my parents never drank. I was never abused physically, mentally, emotionally, or sexually. And I say that because not everybody is as fortunate as I have been. But ever since I was a little kid, I had a couple of quirks in me. You know, I suffer from this ineptness and this feeling of less than. You know, it's like I was coated with something that everybody had and I didn't have, and I spend the rest of my life trying to figure out, you know, why you didn't quite it up the same way my inside did. Because I always thought that I should feel the way that you look, and I could never do that. You know, and drinking created a magical thing in my life. And when I took any drink, you know, it created this magical transformation, and I was no longer inept, and I was no longer, you know, afraid, and I didn't have that sense of, you know, being less than. You know, I became something that I always longed for. You know, and the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous talks about the fact that, you know, when I drank, it gave me a sense of ease and comfort. And I know a lot of you guys did other stuff that give you ease and comfort. But this is Alcoholic Anonymous. You know, and that sense of being comfortable and taking the fear away was the most magical thing that ever happened to this little scared little kid, you know, who didn't know what the hell was going on. And so drinking became the most important thing in my life. My parents, you know, had four boys. I was the youngest boy of the family. They just, you know, told us to go to school, get an education, get married, go to work, take care of your family, and reward yourself. And that's basically what we did. You know, we went to school, we got married, we had kids, we worked hard, we took care of the family, and on the weekend, hey, there was a lot of parties. You know, I had three older brothers, and there were always girls at the house, and so I learned all the social skills of talking to girls and dancing and hugging them, grabbing ass, and I didn't know what the hell I was doing, okay? But that's what my brothers did, and I, you know, I just followed along with that. And drinking did not really become a very important part of my life. It was just, you know, I saw them drinking, and they would dance, and they would cuddle, and they would get happy, and they would do all those wonderful things that people do when you're feeling a little loose, okay? But I didn't know what the hell was going on. I just thought that they were doing something that would create magic, you know, and I wanted some of it, okay? I took my first drink when I was 15, and I'm really ashamed to tell you what it was. It was Red Mountain wine with Coke, okay? I took my last drink on October the 3rd, and it was white wine. And in between my first drink and my last drink, there was a lot of stuff that happened, okay? You know, and by the time that I got into Alcoholic Anonymous, okay, I was a well-seasoned, well-served drinker. And if you ask me, what are you drinking, I would ask you, what do you have? You know, I don't know if any of you have really related to this, where you go to a party, you passed out, and then the next morning, there's a bunch of glasses left over, and there's ashes in there, and then there's some dark stuff on the top or bottom, and you kind of move the ashes to the side and then try to make a drink, okay? You know, and you take that drink, and there's a certain relief that comes to you, right? You know, and people say, well, I didn't drink like that. You know, I was a high bottom drunk. So was I. But at the end of my drinking, I would do anything, anything, so that I could get a drink. Anyway, at the age of 15, I started drinking. It was a lot of fun, and there were absolutely no problems. I went to school, and I got married, and at the age of 21, drinking was beginning to create some problems, but I couldn't see it. I mean, you know where I come from, there's no alcoholics. Okay, I mean, we don't even know what the hell that means, okay? You know, I just had a lot of problems. So I moved from El Paso, Texas to California because I had a cousin right here. You know, and I got my first DUI in Visalia, California, right? And I hate to tell you people there, hey, you know, my fine was $300 and one night in jail, okay? You know, you couldn't buy dinner for the judge today with that, okay? You know, and I thought it was the last thing that happened, and I didn't see anything with that, and I sobered up for 1 year. I became health conscious, and I didn't drink, and then I started drinking, and I lasted 11 months. At the end of 11 months, I couldn't control my behavior. I couldn't predict what was going to happen. One drink sometimes would set me off. All night drinking, nothing would happen. But let me go back and tell you a little bit as to how messed up I was, you know. I was a gifted mathematician at the university, and I wanted to be somebody, right? You know, so I took all these mathematics classes, but I have a problem. I transpose numbers, right? And I remember the head of mathematics telling me, hey, kid, we're trying to get to the moon. With you, we're going to end up in Tijuana, and we can't have that. the guy was right. You know, at that time in the engineering school, you know, we were trying to get to the moon, and with guys like me, you know, there's no way we could have gotten to the moon. We might have ended up in TJ or some other place, right? So that was my first disappointment, okay? Because I really wanted to be a famous mathematician. I had, you know, I had the eagerness, I had the drive, I had the numbers, but I transposed numbers, okay? You know, and that's been the story of my life, okay? Close but not cigar, okay? And so what do you do when you have your first disappointment, okay? You know, you make excuses, at least I did. So instead of being a famous engineer and a famous mathematician, I became a salesman, okay? Not a bad job. You could drink. You know, you can do all kinds of things. Then I got married, and I had a beautiful wife, and I had children. But then I wasn't content with that. You know, the problem with guys like me is that, and I've learned this in Alcoholic Anonymous, right? You know, I'm like a beast, the nature of the beast. I want something. Then I get it, and then I get it, and then I don't want it. You know, but the bad thing is that I don't want anybody else to have it, okay? And that was pretty apparent with relationships, okay? You know, I also had a lot of problems with relationships. Women were always leaving me, you know, and I would be chasing them. Please, 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 stay with me. Please, 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 stay with me, right? So all through my life, you know, I had problems with finance and romance. Always a dollar short, you know, and I, you know, had no trouble getting into a relationship. Keeping one of them was a different matter, okay? You know, now, none of this had really anything to do with drinking. You know, this is just the way that my life went, okay? You know, and I would work my butt off to get to a point, and then when things got just to the point that I was going to make that big score that I always dreamed of, then something drastic would happen, and I would pull the plug, and then I would just go down the drain. And I never associated that with drinking. You know, job after job, friendship after friendship, relationship after relationship. And drinking became a very intricate part of my life, you know, because that's all I look forward to. From the moment that I got up to the moment that I passed out, I was consumed with the idea, how am I going to get my next drink? How am I going to get that relief that the book talks about? That sense of ease and comfort for all the troubles and all the pain and all the stuff that I'm going through. See, because here's another thing that happened with people like me. I have a lot of secrets, and I can't tell anybody the secrets that I have. And drinking somehow alleviated those things, because then I could have a conversation with myself and through other people. I don't know if any of you done that. You know, you're in the middle of the night, and you're a little messed up, you're a little mellow, and then you go past mellow, and then you create an imaginary friend, and then another one, okay? And then you have group therapy, okay? And shit, I mean, why would you want to talk to anybody? I mean, you can go... I did talk to the bartender, okay? The bartender was my doctor, my lawyer, my financial wizard. You know, I would go and I'd say, you know, I think I have a heart attack. They'd say, no, have a drink. Okay, so that would take care of it right there, right? I come from a very good family. You know, my parents were very loving, and as I said, I was never taken care of. Right? So when I moved to California, I ended up in Fresno because I had a cousin who was a real famous horseman. He used to take horses for this wealthy guy. And so we ended up over there in Fryan, where the River Parkway is. We used to live in that house. You know, and I moved to this part of the country. I have never seen farming. I was amazed at how fruit grew in the trees. So I tried to become a farm worker, and I lasted 3 days, okay? Another disappointment in my life, okay? And all through this time, the drinking becomes more and more an intricate part of my life, okay? And I want to do good, but I can't. And when I get up in the morning, you know, I say, I'm not going to drink today, but I can't help myself, and I go out and drinking. I have absolutely no idea what Alcoholic Anonymous is about, what recovery, anything like that. All I know is that I have to have a drink, you know. And I learned all these things after I came to Alcoholic Anonymous. The phrase that the book talks about, okay? If I drink it, it's going to kill me. And if I don't drink it, I'm going to die. You know, and I had those feelings even before I came to Alcoholic Anonymous. Because I would have a real tough night or a good night, whatever you want to call it. You know, and the next morning when I would come to and when I would see all the damage that I had done, I would say, you know, I'm not going to drink again. But if I don't drink it, I'm going to die. And if I drink it, it's going to kill me. You know, and I have no idea. You know, I used to come to meetings like those young guys in the back. And I would look at an old man like myself and I would think, what the hell is that old man going to talk to me about recovery and alcoholism? And that guy would talk about the fact that he would be willing to trade anything that was of value to him to have a drink. But at the end of his drinking, you know, that line that the book talks about, incomprehensible demoralization, what it meant to me, that I would be willing to trade my body, I would be willing to trade my wife, my kids, anything to get a drink. Because see, drinking became the most important thing in my life. You know, I know some of you guys use some other substances, but whatever the substance was, I needed that. You know, I had great intentions. And today was going to be the day that I was going to straighten up. You know, and then I couldn't make it. I just couldn't do it, okay? And I had great intentions, you know, but I just couldn't do it. And I continued to do that, and I continued to play the game of life, and I continued to play, you know, this aggressive attitude that I was brought up with, that you got to succeed, okay? Don't let them see how weak you are. Don't let them get ahead of you. You got to get on top of the problem, and you got to solve it yourself, and you got to get them before they get you, okay? And don't let anybody get close to you, because if you let people come close to you, eventually they're going to hurt you. And I began to build walls between me and you, and you and me, and anything like that. And the only thing that gave me that sense of ease and comfort was a drink. If you are new, I'd like to welcome you here, okay? I hope you had a good story. You know, I always envy people, you know, that they woke up in Rio de Janeiro with 2 tons of coke and 2 dead bodies and 10 girls in there, okay? Mine wasn't like that, okay? I mean, don't you guys get envious of these people that come in and tell you all this stuff? You know, I went to a meeting and this guy said that he had a gun on one hand, you know, 2 pounds of coke on the other one, and another, and a chick on the other hand. So at the end of the meeting, I said, you know, you must have lost an arm. He said, what are you talking about? I said, well, you got a gun, you got a pound of coke, and a chick. Where's the third arm? He said, well, no, it's you know, hypothetical. I said, oh, okay. Just want to make sure, okay? You see, the other problem with being alcoholic, okay, is that we're smart, okay? We're smarter than anybody, okay? I just don't tell you people about it, okay? I think about it. You know, you get into a conversation and somebody's telling you something, you go, yeah, 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 you know. You know, that's the problem with sobriety today. You go to a party where people are drinking, and after the second or third drink, they start getting funny, and then my mind tells me, funny? Why don't you have a drink and they'll know what funny is, okay? They're amateurs right there. So as you can see, I went from a high bottom drunk to drinking whatever I could find. I have to tell you one story, and you know, I was a college graduate that moved to Clovis, Fresno. And after I got rejected from my farm labor career, I decided that I didn't want to work with farmers or anybody. So I moved into a pig farm between Sanger and Fresno, okay? And there were a bunch of, you know, decent people that would get up every morning and go to work. But see, I was too proud and I was too bright and I had gone to the university and I didn't have to do that. So I would spend my whole day next to the pigs, smoking dope and drinking and reading Carlos Castaneda, trying to find, you know, a spiritual light, okay? And to this day, okay, I don't know how I conceived that idea that I could sit there with the pigs, okay, smoking dope and drinking, thinking that I was better than everybody else. And I really felt it, okay? You know, because when the workers would come in the afternoon, I would walk by and I would really think that I was superior to them, right? And that's the kind of thinking that began to take care of me. I got a really well-planned job. I had a career. I worked for this big corporation where you wear a suit, you're an executive, and you have a secretary, and all that. And my drinking began to get out of hand. And I began to do the things that I thought I would never do. I was disloyal to my wife. I began to be a thief, a cheat, and a liar. You know, and my life began to just go down and down and down, and I didn't know what the hell was wrong with me. You know, and my drinking began to get out of control. And by this time, my wife had left me, and I was living in an apartment by myself with the obligatory fruit crate, Playboy, no furniture, slept on the floor, but there was always something to drink right there. And I was at the end of my wit. You know, and like most decent people, they have a career job. You know, when you get in trouble, you go tell your boss, hey, I'm quitting, okay? I don't want to bring the company down, okay? So I'm leaving. I'm at the end of my wit, and I'm at a restaurant. A bunch of people from Alcoholic Anonymous came in. I'm sitting on the counter, and that's the first time that I didn't get drunk. And when people from AA came in, they're, you know, like, I don't know if you guys go to coffee, but you think you own the coffee shop, right? You complain about the service, the coffee's not strong enough, right? And then you get your calculator out to divide the bill at the end of the night, right? That's the kind of people that came in, right? And I didn't know who they were. And they were happy and they were hugging and they were grabbing ass and doing all the things that people in AA do. Oh my God, you pass gas and you think it's a miracle, okay? And I'm sitting on the counter and I'm thinking to myself, this is not fair. They look so happy and I feel so miserable. You know, and I had thought it with the idea of killing myself because I was a total failure. I was a peeled zero by then. Not only did I feel like one, but I was one. All those great dreams, all those great things, and all the great upbringing, going to the Jesuit school and the Catholic school and all that, had gone down the ways. I had spent my days with the pigs. I mean, really pigs, okay? And I was done. I was a peeled zero. And you people came in. And I don't know what compelled me to turn around from the counter and ask you people, hey, can I sit with you guys? And one lady said, you sure you want to sit with us? We're alcoholic. And I don't know what I said, but they grabbed me. You know, and I don't know, you know, to the old timers, I was fresh meat, okay? A couple of guys went out and they brought the big book. They put me in the corner right there and then tell me, rah, 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 yeah, don't drink, go to meetings, you know, the whole thing in there. And I had no idea what the hell they were talking about. And they gave me a big book. And I went home. And by this time, I can't sleep. If I try to close my eyes, those rats are going to get me. And there's a couple of big rats on the corner, right? And I can't let them get me. And the real big rats, and if I close my eyes, it's over, right? The next morning, they were my socks, okay? So it means I have a problem, you know. And I go home and I read the book. And the next day the guy calls me or someplace along that, "Do you have any booze?" Of course I do. What a stupid question. You know, and those were the days before cell phones. So you had those old phones where you have the wires and all that. He said, "I want you to do me a favor. I want you to take that, put the phone in there, and then drop the bottle next to, right there in the sink." You know, and as I'm pouring that quart of Jack Daniels, I'm screaming, crying, and I'm thinking, I hope that SOB knows what he's doing. Otherwise, we just wasted a fifth of Jack Daniels, okay? And he asked me, "Did you drink?" "No." "So I'll call you again." So he called me again. "Have you drank?" "No." He said, "I'm going to pick you up for a meeting." The guy must have been 2 minutes late, but it seems like an eternity. You know, I'm pacing back and forth. And in those days, 1 out of 7 people in AA had cars, okay. And the guy came and picked me up, and he took me to my first meeting. And at the meeting, it was something like this. It was a hospital. And there were some really nice ladies. And I'm 32. I'm 135 pounds, you know. But I look good, okay. You know. And the ladies were so kind, and the guys were so good, and they hugged me, and I didn't want anybody touching me or hugging me. And they would tell me, "You know, if you come with us, and you do the things that we do, chances are, you'll never have to drink again." And I didn't believe them, but I had no other choice, okay? And they used to tell me, "You know, you are the most important person in this meeting." And it was a crowd like this, you know? And nobody had told me that for a long time, right? And so I thought I was special until I learned that they told that to every newcomer, okay? And so after coffee, we went to this place. Tell you how long it's with. We used to have restaurants called Sambo's, okay? Okay. And this guy who's still my sponsor today, we went to coffee, and he said, "You know, you don't have to drink anymore if you don't want to." And I can remember crying, "You don't understand, sir. I haven't wanted to for a long time." I had no idea what Alcoholic Anonymous was. I had no idea that I had a disease, you know, that I was in the midst of a progressive illness, that only a spiritual experience could restore me of this thing. But I had to turn my life and my will over to the care of a power greater than myself. You know, and I used to argue with him. And he said, "You know, there's 1,440 minutes in one day. Whatever the hell you spend more time thinking about it, that's your higher power." I could relate to that. Mostly it was money and sex, okay? It was. Because I was preoccupied. I was, you know, I needed to be needed, wanted, and loved. You know, I was always a dollar short. I was waiting till Friday when I would make that big score, okay? But the big score never came. I was that close, okay? And so I began to go to meetings. You know, and the reason that I remember the 8 days that Jaime was talking about and the other young lady is because I'm driving in this car, and all of a sudden, I realize that one day I'm a drunk, and the next day I'm not. What the hell happened? Why is it that one day I couldn't go one day without drinking, and yet I was able to put 6, 7, 8, 9, 30 days, okay? What has happened that never happened before? So I came to realize that a power greater than myself had really given me another chance. And so, you know, like most newcomers, I begin to fight it. Well, I'm not going to turn my life and my will over to the care of God, you know. And little by little, the guy said, "Well, just come, keep coming back. Don't drink, okay?" And then it came time to do the fourth step, right? And I thought I was really a Don Juan, okay? So I wrote that on a paper sack, and I carry it with me in my back pocket, right? So it comes to do my fifth step. And while I'm reading my fifth step, my sponsor falls asleep, okay? Another disappointment. I thought I was Don Juan, and I came out looking like Elmer Fudd, okay? The purpose of the fifth step for me was that for once in my life, I was able to tell somebody everything. Okay. And when we finished, the guy says, "Is that it?" He said, "I'm sorry I fell asleep, but you're a candy ass." Okay. And so they gave me a sense of belonging, that no matter what I had done, that no matter where I've been, that no matter of all that incomprehensible demoralization that I had participated on, that I was not a bad person, but I was a sick person trying to get well, you know, and that really played a big role in my recovery. See, because all my time, I thought I was a bad person, and I was trying to get so good, okay? It seemed like I spent my time trying to reform or trying to let it all hang out. I could never get down to the middle. And people in Alcoholics Anonymous talk about the fact that I was a very sick individual, and that if I do the things that you people ask me to do, as stupid as they seem, that there might be a chance that I may get well and that my life will straighten up. You know, and I was like most young people. I can really relate to that, you know, because I didn't want to do the steps. I wanted the money step. When do we get to the money step, okay? And forget the fourth, fifth, sixth, and seventh. When do we get to the money step? There is no money step, okay? And so I continued to do that, you know, and I continued to go to meetings, and I continued to do all the things that people ask me in AA. You know, and I used to go to the Alano Club, and there was an old-timer, and he says, you know, being alcoholic is like you were a cucumber, and now you're a pickle. A pickle can never go back to being a cucumber. And I used to go... I was a gifted mathematician. What the hell does that have to do with anything? Okay. But you know what? It has everything to do with everything. Because once I crossed that invisible line, I could never go back to that controlled drinking. If you are new or relatively new, I hope that you take a childlike attitude to Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, do all the stuff they ask you to do, thinking that it's not going to work, okay? Do it to prove them wrong, because that's what I did, okay? I was so smart, okay? I know that shit's not going to work, but I'm going to do it so when I do it, I can tell that guy that he was wrong, okay? 37 years, he hasn't been wrong, you know? We still meet like twice a month, you know, and I explain a problem, and he still tells me you're wrong. And I'm thinking, you know, he's getting too goddamn old. Let me explain it to you again, okay? So I send it all out and everything else, and he tells me you're still wrong. And I say, you're too old, okay, never mind, okay? I'll just go ahead and do that shit you want me to do. I realized when I did the sixth and seventh step that I had a few quirks in me. And it wasn't that feeling of insecurity. It wasn't that feeling of feeling less than. It wasn't that feeling of not being quite good enough. What it was is that I was selfish, I was self-centered, and I was egocentric. And I thought the rules applied to everybody except me. And I would do things when I want to do them, if I want to do them, and if I didn't want to do them, you didn't have a right to tell me what to do, okay? And I was a bigot, and I was angry, and I don't like people, and I judge people, and I thought I was better than, you know? And I had to come with those things and tell me that, you know, you are really not a nice person. And the worst part is you enjoy being that asshole, okay? I mean, you were that with pride and with honor, okay? And so I had to change those things about me only because, You know, I have a theory, okay? Everybody's entitled to three bad days. You know, this is a spiritual program. So at the end of 3 days, like they used to tell me, either get laid or drink, okay? Very simple. Just cut it off, okay? Whatever is pissing you off, don't do it, okay? Change it, okay? Everybody should get upset, you know, for 3 days, and everybody has a right. But at the end of 3 days, you have to do that. Then I have to make amends. How much time do I have?
5 more minutes.
5 more minutes. Okay, so I better set it up. Okay, I was married. I had 3 little kids. And my wife left the 3 little kids. So I had to raise my 3 boys. And I hated that woman. Okay? You know, because the kids were 7, 8, and 9. And I became a single parent. People in AA used to come to my house. And I thought I was so special that they would come in and wanted to see me. But what they were really doing, they were making sure I wasn't sudden abusing those 3 little boys, okay? And they helped me raise those kids. And then somebody came into my life, and she helped me raise those kids. We just celebrated 30 years in AA married, okay? She's 32 years sober, I'm 37 years sober. And I told Ken that being married 30 years to a lady in AA is 10 times as hard as staying sober, okay? I know I'm out of time, but let me tell you, I made amends. I continue to take personal inventory. I continue to give of myself. I continue to go to meetings, help people, and try to be a little bit more understanding. As I trudged the road of happy destiny, as I've gone to Alcoholic Anonymous, as I spent all this time right here, anything that pulls at me, anything that pushes at me, anything that holds me back is a blessing. And a blessing is long gone before you realize it's a blessing. And a blessing will open doors that you didn't think were possible to open. And that is why today I believe that Alcoholic Anonymous has been the greatest blessing in my life. Because I used to be bitter, I used to be angry, I used to be prejudiced, and today I'm a little bit better. Thank you.